Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, Love is Strange. It's a new film by Ira Sachs starring John Lithgow and Alfred Molina playing an older gay couple who run into trouble as a result of getting married. Love is Strange opens tomorrow night. I saw a media screening a few weeks ago and found it really quite moving and beautiful. Filmmaker Ira Sachs, who directed and co-wrote Love is Strange, is here in our studios to tell us about the film, and we'll play some clips. His previous films include Married Life, 40 Shades of Blue, which won a Sundance Grand Jury Prize, and Keep the Lights On, his last film before Love is Strange. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in 2012 and was nominated for 4 Independent Spirit Awards. Love is Strange premiered at Sundance this year and was also featured in this year's Los Angeles, Tribeca, and Berlin International Film Festivals. Ira Sachs, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you, Eric. Good to be here.
And congratulations on a lovely, touching, and well-acted and beautifully shot film.
Thank you. Those are good qualities, I hope.
I saw Love is Strange at a media screening last month, and I have the official synopsis from the news release, of course, but how do you describe this film in a nutshell? What's your sort of cocktail party sum up of what this film is about when your friends ask you?
Well, it centers on a couple who have been together for 30 years, Ben and George, and 40 years. And they get married at the beginning of the film, and then one of them loses his job as a choir director for a Catholic high school. And so as a result of that, they can no longer afford their apartment, and temporarily they split up. One of them moves in with 2 gay cops who live downstairs, and the other with his nephew and niece, a novelist, and their teenage son. And really, the film is about these two men trying to get back together and form a home again, but it's also about love from the different perspectives of all the people they encounter.
Mm-hmm. So, this film opens, if I remember right, on their wedding days. They're getting ready to leave the house, and they're bickering in this loving way that only couples together for many years can do.
Mm-hmm.
But after they're married, and because they get married, as you said, George, who's played by Alfred Molina, gets fired from his job teaching music at a Catholic school. The school says its hands are tied. The church hierarchy won't allow it, and which I think is a great scene. So, and so John Lithgow's character, Ben, is retired, I guess. He's receiving a pension.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it's just with the loss of George's income, they can't afford to keep their Manhattan home. So,
well, it's a film in a lot of ways about the fragility of our lives, and that can be economic. It can also be in terms of age. It's I think the tenderness in the film really comes from a sense that all these people are very, very human, and there's something precarious to some extent about what's under their ground, and that can be their home or their relationships.
So let's play this one cut here. This is where they call their family and friends together to explain the situation that they're in.
Now, we invited you all here today because, well, your family.
Are you telling us you're getting divorced already?
That's what I thought, too.
No. We have to sell the apartment. And we found a buyer already. So pretty soon, we're going to have to move out. Now, it won't be long before I get another job, and shouldn't be long before we find another apartment, but in the meantime...
It's just a transition phase, probably just a week or two.
We need a place to stay.
Wait a minute. Did I miss something here?
These last weeks have been tough on us, Elliot. Losing the job, looking for health insurance. We need a breather.
Yeah, believe me, moving out of here is the last thing we want to do.
It's only temporary. We'll find a new place. Very soon.
So very soon, unfortunately, doesn't end up being very soon after all.
No, it all takes a little bit longer. It's very interesting to hear it as a radio play because... really so much of this film is based on the kind of comic timing and the nuance of these actors and their faces.
Right.
So,
we are missing the visual cues.
You're missing a lot here.
Sure.
It's movies.
That's why I was saying the scene. That's why I wanted to describe the scene later, which I don't have a clip of, but that one would have worked great in audio. And this is the scene where George actually loses his job, and they've gotten married, and you see actually right before this, you see a scene of him conducting the girls' choir, I guess, at this Catholic high school. And then the next scene, he's in the principal's office or headmaster or whatever they call them in Catholic schools. And the guy's saying, "Nope, sorry, you have to go." Describe that scene for us. You wrote it. I'm sure you remember it better than I do. I've only seen it once.
It was actually the first scene we shot in production of the film. What's interesting is Alfred Molina's response. And a lot of it is actually in his eyes. And what you see is someone who, what I really think is particular about Ben and George, and many people have asked me, why don't they take it to court, or why don't they fight back, or won't there be protests and all these kind of things? And the truth is that's not who they are generationally as individuals. They're a very modest couple. And what you see, though, is that even though they're not going to fight back, you see in this very one moment in Alfred Molina's face that they're also not going to step back. They're not going to be anything other than who they are. Right. And to me, that's really inspiring.
So that at the end of this, after the guy is firing, George, he says, George starts leaving, he says, "Oh, pray with me." And
that always gets a laugh.
Well, yeah. And it's just so audacious. And so George turns around to him and says, I think he's going to say, F you.
Right.
But he doesn't. He's much kind of handles it much more classily. What does he say? Do you remember?
He actually says he's going to pray on his own.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
He would prefer to do that. Thank you very much. These are classy guys. I think what the film really presents, though, is a world in which there is this conflict with the Catholic Church, and there is this shifting ground in which the questions of gay equality and marriage equality are playing out. At the same time, what you also see is a couple who are so fully in the world in which they live, and they're so surrounded by this family of friends and biological family and nieces and nephews and kids. And that is something which I think is very new for my generation, which is this inclusivity of so many of our worlds.
Right. So they overlap more than they did before.
Yeah. People have said, you couldn't have made this film 5 years ago because gay marriage wasn't a discussion. And I say I couldn't have made this film 5 years ago because I couldn't have made as optimistic a film about the love between two people of the same sex because I didn't know that.
And it's also, they're not typically gay in the stereotypical gay way, I guess I would say. And yet I know so many – what I loved about this is I know so many men of about that age who – gay men who are so much like that, and they seem so real.
I don't even know what the typical looks like, to be honest. I think all of us are individual in so many different ways. To me, these are two men whose sexuality is part of who they are. It does not – the adjective doesn't define who themselves more than any other of a number of things that you could describe them to, including an artist, including an uncle, including a lover. There's all these things, including a white man, including a man without any money. There's all these ways that you could describe these people. So I hope to create a full portrait.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you didn't make this film as a political film, but I was, I have to confess that I did have, as you said, some of other audience people who asked you, there's a little irritation that why don't they fight this thing? And, I just wonder if does New York not have laws protecting people against being fired or do they have a religious exemption at this point? You live in New York. What do you know?
That's a good question in terms of whether this could be fought specifically in New York. And we read about a case in the Midwest where this had happened, where a man had married his partner and was fired by the Catholic Church because of that. And since we've made the film, almost every week I'm sent another news article in which this is taking place. To be honest, the details of it as a kind of political event were not what interest us as writers. What interest us was how it set off in motion this story about a couple who are very much in love, who have to face an obstacle together. And what we wanted to make was a love story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the narrative structure of the film. Something had to tear them apart. What we watch is how they try to get back together.
Right. So now I like this next cut is tell us a little bit about Ben first. I want to play the cut from the bar where they're in this bar. But
well, John Lithgow plays Ben, who's 10 years older than the character played by Alfred Molina. He's a painter and a good one, but he's never been recognized in a wide way, but he's always kept painting. This character was, for me, very inspired by a man that I was very close to, who was a sculptor who was my great-uncle's partner in Memphis for 45 years. His name was Ted Rust, and when Ted was 98, he began his last piece, which was of a teenage boy with a backpack on him. When he was 99, that piece remained unfinished, and he died that year. What I really loved about Ted and what I have seen in so many of that generation is a passion for art, for education, for discovery, that is something that that Ben certainly has. Ben is someone we can admire and someone I have learned from, as is John Lithgow.
Mm-hmm. And Ben, it's funny you mentioned your great uncle who paints this or is doing a sculpture of a kid with a backpack, because John, pardon me, Ben, is painting one of his grandnephew's friends up on the rooftop.
Yeah, so that was the inspiration, was this object that in a way contained so much of the history of the characters. And that painting, by the way, was painted by my husband, who is a painter. And when we started working on the film, he and John Lithgow spent a lot of time trying to find really the style of the painting that Ben would have. And Boris Torres, my husband, ended up creating that work.
Here, I said turn off my phone, and now mine's buzzing.
Yeah.
Okay, I throw it on the floor. So now there's this clip in the bar. If you could set that up a little bit for
us,
please.
Sure. This is in the last third of the film. The couple is out for an evening together, and they're in Julius, which is the oldest gay bar in New York City. It is a place that has an enormous amount of history, and there was a story, a real story, where a group of men went into that bar, and they asked for to be served, and because they were gay men, they were not served. And in truth, those men had had a bunch of newspaper reporters all present in order to photograph this moment where they were not allowed to drink. It was called a sip-in, and so that's important to the scene as well.
I'm sorry. You guys look very thirsty. What can I get you?
Scotch on the rocks for me, vodka and tonic, half a lime, no ice for the gentleman here. Busy tonight?
It's Friday night.
Kids have taken Aspirin.
Good for them. You guys new in the neighborhood?
Are you kidding? There was a famous sip-in right here in this bar to challenge the New York State regulation that prohibited bars from serving homosexuals.
Yeah, we have a clipping from the New York Times, Friend or something.
1966. Me and four other guys, we came in here accompanied by five reporters. When we were denied service, we denounced the state liquor authority.
Oh, my God. You're that guy?
No, it's one of the guys.
Wow. Well, this runs on me, fellas.
I wish I could. You're such a liar.
What?
He'll do anything for a free drink.
Oh, I knew the guy who thought it up.
Frank?
Yeah, that was his claim to fame.
Yeah, I thought his claim to fame was something entirely different.
Well, that too.
That's John Lithgow and Alfred Molina in a scene from Love is Strange, opening in Bay Area theaters tomorrow. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen with Love is Strange director and writer Ira Sachs.
I want to say one thing about that scene, which is when we were shooting the film, John Lithgow and Alfred Molina, who had known each other casually for maybe 20 years, really got to know each other very well in the course of the film. And they developed this very beautiful bond and a beautiful friendship that was full of a lot of storytelling and a lot of humor. They've both been married for 30 years. They've both been thespians who have sort of similar careers on stage and in films. And they shared so much, but mostly what they shared was humor. And so they were always laughing a lot on set, and they decided that they had to put that laughter into the movie somewhere. And this was the scene where they found the perfect spot.
Yeah, otherwise you wouldn't allow them to laugh.
No,
any real reason.
You know,
it is a light moment. I mean, in the midst of all a bunch of kind of gloominess.
And I think the film is filled with those mixtures. It was something that, for me, as I've gotten older, is something I really believe is useful as a storyteller, which is this kind of sweet and sour, and that you have, in almost any moment in the film, there is a combination of things. And I benefit particularly from having actors like John Lithgow and Marissa Tomei, Lithgow, and Molina, actors who have incredible comic timing. So you have these set piece scenes, for example, the one between Marissa and Lithgow, where they're struggling over how to use this shared space in one of the apartments,
and she's trying to get her work done.
She's trying to get his work done, and he's really bugging her, and they're very, very funny. But they do it in a really natural tone, and I think that's something that's really been important to the film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It seems like they're not trying to be funny at the time at all. They're just irritated with each other, and it comes across as funny because you can see the irritation, but he can't see it. As an audience member, you see, like, you stupid fool, shut up.
Well, I think they're all working in a really naturalistic vein as performers, and that's part of the quality that I think is maybe new for Lithgow, particularly, who's done a lot of television and has not been asked to do this kind of performance. And yet, at the same time, they're able to make it very special.
Mm-hmm. So we have the trailer queued up as well. And, of course, this is just, again, without the visual cues, it's a little bit hard to tell what's going on. But at least we'll hear some of the other high points. Before we play that, though, I want to ask you one more thing, because this might help people understand what's going on in the trailer. Without giving away too much, tell us about Joey. This is the grandnephew who's forced to share his bedroom with Ben, you know, this old man. And this jealousy develops between regarding Joey's friend's attention. This is the friend who Ben paints on the rooftop at some point after Marissa, after the, what's her name in the movie? The grandniece, Kate, has convinced him, hey, I can get him out of my hair by having him paint up on the roof, at least for a little while. So he paints the Joey's friend.
Yes,
is posing for him up on the roof.
Well, I will say that when I began to work on the script with my co-writer Mauricio Zacharias, and he and I wanted to do this multi-generational love story that centered on this older couple, it was the same point in my own life where I had just married my partner, and we had had twins. I had gone from living alone to living with my husband, my kids, the kids' mother, and often we would have family members come to help us with these new little babies. And there was a lot of humor in that situation, and there was also a lot of cross-generational dynamics that to me were very important. And I thought a lot about what it is to be young and to learn from our grandparents, who seemed like aliens on some level, and yet over time you learn something that can be very deep. And so the film, though it centers on this one couple, is really about three different acts of life. This teenager who's discovering love for the first time, this couple in the middle, Darren Burroughs and Marissa Tomei, who are really in the middle of their life and questioning sort of middle-age questions, and then there's this older couple, Ben and George.
And their own challenges in their relationship.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, so that's so the trailer. We'll hear the trailer and maybe pick out some parts from that to talk about some more.
Glasses. I can't find my glasses. Has anybody seen my glasses?
Please, God, not today.
We are gathered here today with the purpose of uniting in matrimony George Esteban Gurrea Benjamin Arthur Hull.
Yes!
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 Your love, your dedication, your commitment to each other are an example to be followed.
Word got out to the Archdiocese.
You've all known this whole time that Ben and I have been living together.
The decision is effective immediately.
Now, we invited you all here today because, well, your family. With my private lessons and Ben's pension, we need a place to stay.
Why are we even talking about this? I'm the only one with the extra bedroom.
No, it's not about that, Mindy. It's Poughkeepsie.
I didn't have a very productive day.
You know my favorite story of yours?
Is it Neighbors again?
No, it's your uncle.
Which one is your favorite?
I just now decided to have dinner. Someone's just turned up with a bloody baby.
Uncle Ben?
My friend is here. We need to work on a school presentation, and there's nowhere else for us to.
Who?
That's so gay.
He doesn't mean homosexual, Uncle Ben. He just means stupid.
Hey, can I have some private time, please?
When you live with people, you know them better than you care to.
There's a famous Scipion right here in this bar.
Oh, my God. You're that guy?
Yeah, I was one of the guys.
Wow.
Well, this runs on me, fellas.
You're such a liar.
So that is the trailer from Love is Strange. You're listening to Out in the Bay. My guest here is Ira Sachs, the director and co-writer. And yeah, there's a couple other things that came up in there that made me think, like, there's when Joey's friend, Joey says, "Oh, that's so gay." He sees him painting a picture of his friend.
Yeah.
And then the friend says, "Oh, you know, he doesn't mean gay. He means stupid." And then it reminded me, though, there's this scene a little bit later where Kate, Joey's mother, questions the appropriateness of Ben painting this friend.
Right.
And that was sort of an interesting moment where you kind of wonder, well, wait a minute, how progressive is she?
Right. Well, I think that when you all live under one roof, everything becomes a little bit more complicated because you start rubbing each other in different ways.
Yeah.
And these are imperfect people who are trying to figure out how to get by together.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's what makes them very human. Uh-huh. I also think that teenagers in general become very complicated people to live in a home because you don't, as a kid, your parents become more and more foreign, and the same happens in reverse.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say there, but there was this. Can you tell us anything more about these other actors?
We
talked a little bit about John Lithgow and Alfred Molina and Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, the film is, it's a really New York film, and it's filled with New York actors, which is kind of. Like here we are with a day player, and I get a woman like Adrienne Lennox who won a Tony for Doubt, or I have Cheyenne Jackson in the film who I cast as a gay cop who is also a Dungeons and Dragons fanatic, and I knew this gay cop who he and his partner lived in a house that my husband first lived in when I was in New York, and I love the contradiction of the gay cop, and I think Cheyenne really embodies that in the sense that he's got this kind of movie star, classic good looks in a kind of Rock Hudson way, and at the same time he's super open with his sexuality, which mm-hmm. seems to me so modern
right, in a lot
of ways. Marissa was a wonderful addition to the film, and one of the things that she has said about the movie, which I'm glad to hear, is that for her it was one of the first chances to play a woman of her age and experience. She wasn't asked to be younger or dumber mm-hmm. or to not have lived as much as she's lived.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think you really see an adult woman in that performance. And she's just so good.
Mm-hmm.
What she's able to do with so little is really, really quite wonderful.
I remember now what it was I was going to ask you a second ago. It was about Cheyenne Jackson because I had interviewed him a month or two ago when he was here for about a month and a half ago when he was here for the playing with the San Francisco Symphony. And I'd just seen the film, Love is Strange. And we talked briefly about it before we went on the air. And I shared with him that I felt a little, while watching the film in the middle, I was kind of like feeling a little anxious and, okay, come on. It feels like it drags a little bit in the middle, but he said, yeah, I thought so too, but we both agreed that that's about having the audience feel the same frustration that everybody in that situation is feeling, like, when the hell is this going to end? Not like, when's the movie going to end?
Yes.
But because I definitely, with the acting, hung in there and wanted to, find out what happens. And something definitely does happen, which changes things in a way that you really go, wow.
Yeah.
But
well, I think that there's a tension because these are two people, Ben and George specifically, who you love seeing together. And the drama of the film is that they're torn apart. So I think the anticipation is to try to understand how they're going to be reunited. And there's a scene in the middle of the film, which I think is very important, where the two are in bed together. And it's the first time they're actually in a bunk bed together.
The grandnephew's bunk bed.
Yeah, and you actually, for the first time, get a sense of what they've been like those many, 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 many nights that they've had in a bed next to each other, physically touching each other. And that kind of intimate dialogue is something you haven't seen earlier in the film, and it seems so, it suddenly reveals what there is to lose.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the way portrayals of gay characters, gay and lesbian characters, have changed over time during your career, during your lifetime, and the ability to get straight actors to play major gay roles?
Well, I was very affected by Alfred Molina's portrayal of Joe Orton's lover, Dennis Kenneth Halliwell, in Prick Up Your Ears, which was when I was in college. So this was the mid-80s, and it was a film about the playwright Joe Orton. And, that was a relationship which was based on fact, in which eventually the lover murdered Joe Orton. So it was definitely a different kind of picture that I had as a younger man seeing that movie. And I thought it was a great film. So I think we can have different kinds of portrayals. What's new for me about this film is the optimism mm-hmm. that I feel as an individual about what is possible in love between two people of the same sex. And I think that is really because the world has changed in a lot of ways that we couldn't have imagined so recently.
Have any current projects you're working on now besides running around the country pushing this one?
Yeah, I'm working. Mauricio and I are writing a third in what we consider a New York trilogy. This is a kids' film about two boys who become best friends, and for various reasons, they decide to take an oath of silence and they stop talking.
Wow! And, for how long? We'll find out.
Yeah. So it's another drama about intimacy. And life between men and families and also there's a whole real estate element again mm-hmm. in the film.
So Mauricio Zacharias, you've worked on this is your second film you've worked on and you're working on the third now.
Correct.
How did you happen to team up and you know what's that all about?
Well, we're both New Yorkers, transplants. He's been in the city for maybe 15 years. He was a USC graduate student. He's from Brazil. We had a very good friend in common, the filmmaker Karim Anouz, who made a film called Madame Sata a few years ago. And Karim introduced us, and we just spent a lot of time talking about life, and we share a lot of interests. And when we started working on Keep the Lights On, we both felt that there were not enough stories about contemporary gay life. They didn't exist, and we wanted to make one about the life as we knew, and so we made this film, Keep the Lights On, which was very much an autobiographical film about the 10 years of my previous relationship. It defined, it depicted a New York and a gay life that I think we hadn't seen in a lot of ways. I think this one does too. Mm-hmm. In a certain way, this is just as progressive. It's a film about marriage, but I think it's also a film about a new place for gay people in our culture and in our lives. And the world that surrounds this couple seems to me very new.
Mm-hmm. Have your previous films had gay themes in them?
My first film was a film called The Delta, which was about a young teenage boy in Memphis, Tennessee, where I grew up, and his relationship with a Vietnamese American immigrant man, and it was part of the new queer cinema and came that was important to me at that point. And then it was about 15 years before another gay character was in my film. I made a couple of films between The Delta and Keep the Lights On, but I think what's interesting is how even socially, but also economically, there's a pressure to hide certain things around sexuality, and I'm in resisting that now.
Great. Thank you very much. Ira Sachs, director of Love is Strange, thanks for being here, and thanks for your beautiful film, too. It's really, really great. Is there a public website where listeners can go to get more info about you and the movie?
Yeah, there's a website for the film called loveisstrangethemovie.com.
loveisstrangethemovie.com. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. You can hear tonight's show, a year of past shows, and a dozen of our all-time favorites on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can also sign up for free podcasts and get the Stitcher app, that's right, Stitcher, that lets you hear radio programs on mobile devices. On our plain favorites page, you can hear some of our personal favorites from our almost 10 years on the air. They include interviews with John Waters, Ang Lee, Leslie Gore, Matthew Shepard's mother Judy Shepard, and a feature on Liberace. Out in the Pay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KALW, our host station, for studio use and airtime, and tonight's engineer, Debbie Kennedy. As an independent production, not a KALW staff production, Out in the Bay receives no financial help from KALW. We depend on community support. It's easy and tax-deductible on our website, outinthebay.org. You can also mail a check to Out in the Bay, 175 Hancock Street, San Francisco, 94114. Our theme music was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. Learn more about Holly on her blog, hollymead.tumblr.com. Oh, almost forgot. I want to thank for a grant from HYPE, Horizons Young Professionals for Equality, a program of Horizons Foundations. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, comments, and questions. So write to us, eric@outinthebay.com and marilyn@outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening. I am out of here.